From the beautiful campus of Texas A&M University, the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology brings you the Sports Medicine Podcast. Our mission is to make sense of and connect the science, practice, and application of the latest findings in sports medicine and human performance to the real world. Here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Well, hello and welcome to the weekly edition of the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance podcast. We are so glad that you took the time to download us and you're listening today. Every week we strive to bring you an interesting person in the world of human performance, sports medicine, and sometimes general health. And today, I think, is no exception. We have with us on the line Mr. Mark Bravo from Oklahoma. Welcome to the podcast, Mark.
Good morning, folks. Great to be here.
It's glad to have you on. And let me take a moment and give the folks a little bit of an introduction to why we have you on the podcast, and then we'll just crank off and start talking. We have Mark on the podcast today at the recommendation of one of our Huffines volunteers, Emily Schmidt, who's a big runner, and she happened to meet Mark at one of the marathons that she was running. Mark is a running wellness coach and speaker. He's a race announcer and, as he calls himself, a running liaison. He has a bachelor's degree at the University of Oklahoma in broadcast journalism, and he has various coaching certificates out there. He is a national commentator on running and other sporting events. He wrote the book called Momentum, 77 Observations Towards a Life Well Lived. He's a veteran of over 30 marathons and 400 road races. And so, again, welcome to the podcast, Mark.
Thank you a lot, Tim. It's great being here.
So let's just start with the conversation on your degree's in broadcast journalism, but you really enjoy the running, racing world. So what got you started on helping others better their lives through running?
I was very fortunate, Tim. I was asked by a friend to participate, now close to 35 years ago, in a six-mile race. Back then, they were more often referred to as 3 and 6 milers rather than 5 and 10Ks, which dates me quite a bit. And basketball, even with my great physical stature of like 5'7", was always my life and what I thought I had any physical ability for, pretty well wrapped up in basketball. So I wondered why anyone would bother running all those laps or all those miles when they can just run some like I did, 15 minutes hard and play ball. But
yeah, running seems like a pointless adventure sometimes, doesn't it?
Even now. But so I thought it was nice of him to offer, and I went and thought the first 3 miles would go great, and it might take me all day to do the rest, but it worked a little better than that. But to particularly answer your question, probably the camaraderie at events such as this, where the attitude is roughly 99% positive for many folks who have been there. I think they'll agree, from everyone who shows up, no matter what the ability level, everyone seems equal on that day that you're out there, and that really resonated with me, and somehow folks would begin, I happen to have an affinity for the sport, and folks would begin asking me questions. I was never the fastest runner at very many races, but I like speaking about how you might better yourself on the road, so I guess from that the coaching a dozen years ago spring, and it's been a great ride, and it's evolved from just running coaching to the mental side of things.
So why do you think running is special? Why is it so important and special for people?
I'll take it probably first from my perspective, and it is that I need virtually nothing to run. You better have some article or two of clothing on, especially if you're female. But as far as equipment, you don't need much of anything. It, again, levels the playing field in my mind, Tim, once you're out there. And I'm a big believer everyone doesn't have to and probably shouldn't run, but finding that thing that brings you closer to the best you can be. With me, it's running. I unquestionably think more clearly when I'm on the roads. I wish I could remember what I thought about some of the time, but there is absolutely no question. The confidence is brimming, no matter. And my running career has taken quite a few turns, and it's nothing like it was 15 years ago in terms of sheer speed and such. But the gratitude only rises year after year, especially in my mid-50s now. And so it is a very special thing that you don't need to find 8 or 10 people with whom to participate to get a game going. You can do little bits here and there, virtually anywhere if you travel a lot. And I just think it raises the calibration of the world around a lot of people. It allows them to actually get outside themselves no matter what's going on and give back and offer to others very often.
Well, and you brought up something there just a moment ago that when you travel, I've always thought that was the best way for me to find out about the surrounding area that I'm traveling to, is when you go for a run, you see places that you never expect to see.
Oh, a lot of people do that. I might label myself more of a clueless runner. I get the miles in, and especially with not a great sense of direction, it has made me want to look around more. So I do get to take in where I'm running, but many people have associated the sport with a way to really see what's around, because sometimes you get a little bit mindless driving a car. You may not notice what's going on, but running, you're creating your world. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you can stop and smell the proverbial roses if you'll just choose to.
Well, and that's a great point about running as well, is that at some point you can, I guess they call it spinning out in the psychology world, is you can get into that groove when you're running and you spin out and your mind goes places and the running becomes automatic, and before you know it, you're done. And like you said, you have all these other interesting thoughts that you didn't have before.
Oh, you bet. Without question. I now try to really take note of when I'm out and where the mind goes, and there's no question, and all I can attribute it to is one's confidence level ramping up. And again, this has nothing to do with one's affinity for the sport, whether they are aspiring to walk or run a 5K race for a charity or never bother with the event, to elite marathoners. I try to give that message even to my elite athletes, something I call a kinder, gentler approach. It doesn't mean you aspire less high, but when you are able to call upon some attributes that I think the sport really magnifies, like gratitude and things such as that, you actually are letting your best energy flow easier. And I've seen it with up and down the line, from elite to lesser talented folks. If you can't be satisfied ever with a performance, then you're destined for not so good news, and probably a much lesser degree of longevity in the sport.
Right. Yeah, because there's always going to be someone faster than you are.
No question, and you can't control either their effort or their approach. My mother taught me optimism. I speak about it in the book, and it's probably the greatest gift I've ever been given by anyone.
So, and speaking of that, let's just jump onto that, since you've brought that up. You do talk about positivity in your book. Why is that important for success?
For one thing, no matter what is achieved, where is the joy without a positive attitude? Either you can never be satisfied, as I mentioned before, or you're always looking for more. Just a quick analogy, because a couple days ago I ran a half marathon at a race where I ran my first marathon 29 years previous. So I always have fond memories of this race. And I remember 29 years ago a specific incident. I'm running with a young man who seems like a great young man, and we've gone about 12 miles together, so we're almost to the halfway point of a race, and it's shaping up to be a day where I accomplish time-wise. It's only about my third marathon, what I didn't think I was ready for. So I am feeling wonderful. And all of a sudden he says, "Oh no, there comes the first woman. I hate to run with women. I can't let a woman beat me." Well, to capsulize the rest of the day, she came up and was absolutely delightful. She and I went to about the 25-mile mark, about a mile to go together. At that point, she was 39 years old and aspiring to the Olympic trials, where you needed a particular time goal to get in the U.S. Olympic trials. She didn't quite make it, but she was very gracious, and I hope she helped me as much as I helped her. And he might still be running because I never saw him finish. This was a case where a guy was broken down by comparison, and I've never forgotten it.
So don't compare yourself to anyone else and be positive. Can running help generate that positive attitude in your life?
Without question. I have seen and been fortunate to coach some folks. A young lady, again, as you mentioned, I'm from Oklahoma City. She was not a victim, but she was a survivor of the Oklahoma City federal building bombing in 1995, for which our race, the Memorial Marathon, is put on. And she was the last live person pulled out at 6.5 hours. She happened to weigh about 350 pounds at the time, and she, while stuck in the rubble, somebody was reaching her, and they had their hands clasped, and the person had to leave but promised to come back because there was a warning of another bombing about an hour later, and they had to leave, and he came back, and she emerged. And she went on a mission where, when I met her, she had already lost about 170 pounds. So I was not responsible for that, but she probably has lost 30 pounds. She wanted to be a runner at that point. She was already cycling. She speaks on behalf of about attitude. The memorial and museum created so folks will remember this bombing as to hopefully not let it happen again. And this person is such a different individual. She says running actually did it. She had already lost most of those 200 pounds, but doing something, maybe it's that you never could see yourself doing that. She would come to the finish line and cheer people on and say she'd be out the next year, but she never believed it until she started. And it makes no difference what your ability level, your speed is, but once the momentum begins or turns from negative momentum, momentum being a positive term, but it can be negative. All you must do is turn that boulder, and it can be vast and quick, and sometimes there's no turning back, fortunately. So the sport is, I've seen it elevate folks many, many times.
Well, it's interesting you bring this up because 2 weeks ago we had on the podcast a lady named Lee Liebman from the Back on Your Feet organization in Dallas and nationwide, where they have homeless individuals that they run with 3 times a week. And the program not only gets those people running, but they also help them land jobs and find residences and stuff. And so they're really in that. And that's the one thing that she talked about, how the running helps people with their self-confidence, with the joy, and with the hope in their life again.
It's a great organization. I actually talked to those folks a couple of weekends ago at, or actually this last weekend, I was very near Dallas at the marathon in Fort Worth, and they are doing great things, and you'll find those in various communities. And when you can do that, these folks actually are creating a life. It's just like when you can show someone a positive word or a bit of simple notice, especially if you come from a place of respect, what it can do for them, you may never know, and you don't have to know. The email analogy that maybe people have gotten, and I don't know exactly the accuracy of it, but where somebody came upon a person in an elevator, and they acknowledged them, and the first person said they were headed to end their life, but they realize they actually can matter to someone. That may be a pretty drastic analogy, but again, I've seen folks' confidence level. We are the lucky ones. We're in control of our own destiny. So if we can, sometimes by simple acknowledgement, show folks that they have a place here and they have worth and we're not too busy for them, you never know where it goes.
Yeah. Now, we have been talking about the positive side of running and the things that it can do to help. It strikes me that the people that are listening are probably going, you know, many of them are going, geez, that sounds great. I'd like to run, but I really can't get started. What have you seen as the hardest obstacle for people to get past when they try to start running?
That would simply be their minds, that they can't do it, that it's so foreign. The great thing about the sport also, Tim, is you can begin this sport easily in your 50s, in your 60s. There is a great couple here in Oklahoma. They're 86 and 82, respectively, and I only began coaching them about 9 years ago, and now mainly we became great, great friends. Mainly we're simply friends, but we do some coaching. Well, they told me, and they were fine athletes, but they had never begun running till their 50s, and they were running into their 80s. She, in fact, still is. He's had a few challenges, but the fact that this sport, you can begin on any level, and oh, a noted former Olympian, Jeff Galloway, has a famous walk-run approach to the sport, which is a very, very credible way to aspire to both just start to move and to elevate to maybe whatever it may be that you desire, a 5K or beyond. I've seen many walk-run approaches or walking. Motion is the key. Right. Running tends to, so don't ask too much of yourself right away. Anything done safely will benefit you. And also, it's not how much you do any single effort, but it's that you do something often.
That you just go do it, huh?
And just wait for the momentum. And the walk-run approach, simply where you run a little bit, walk breaks, you're still moving forward. That's all we're looking for. Can absolutely change the game, and it has meant many people getting started who wouldn't have otherwise.
Well, and let's certainly put a word out there for those folks that are want to do this. You know, we certainly, you talked about they don't need much equipment, but they certainly need good shoes, don't they?
Absolutely. You want to, folks ask me what the best brand is, and it's really often not a brand thing. That's more a particular individual preference.
Right.
It's that you have the type of shoe you need. If you have special concerns, a very high arch, a broken down arch, which will cause you to land either inward or outward, you want to address that. And shoe professionals abound everywhere, but there are three types of shoe to consider. If you happen to be a pretty neutral runner without much going on, which normally people think is that's the greatest outcome you could have, because you can usually do with a more simple shoe, then you call that cushioning. If you need motion control for correcting a little bit of a, as I said, inward or outward land, then motion control comes in. Stability, actually, in the middle is less motion control, but deals with what a particular issue or two you might have. And a few professionals here can watch you walk in no time, three or four steps, and often see if and what you need in terms of specialties. And then it's brand name and, gosh, go for the color then.
That's
after
right.
That. It's whatever works for you.
And the colors are big right now, aren't they?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And so, but again, we would reiterate, there are probably running stores in most cities nowadays, and go use those professionals. Just don't walk into a department store and buy a set that looks good or a set of shoes that look good, you know. Get some help with that first, because that can make all the difference in your running experiences, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed, especially at first. You afterward tend to know what you need, and then it's your call, which I still agree that the individual proprietors give you more care per capita than just buying the shoe anywhere or taking a shot at a shoe just because it looks good. I like to support our local vendors, and it keeps not only, and you'll find the most successful of these vendors, I talk to them all the time, and I say, you got a great store, and it's a cool store, and those things are factors. But more important than anything in a store or a brand's longevity is that they give back to community. Mm-hmm. They have community runs, so-called Couch to 5K, everything from there to training on upward. And they communicate with the running clubs around the city, and they become part of the mission rather than simply a vendor.
Yeah. Now, we always like to talk about personal journeys, that the people that we talk to here on the podcast about their own personal journeys, because there's usually quite a bit of motivation that goes into that. And we know from your backstory is that you have continued to run in spite of hip surgery.
Yes, indeed. I had a journey that began in 05, what I thought might be, at worst case scenario, a stress fracture, and gee, it might be 8 to 12 weeks off. The most noted running doctor and a dear friend of mine for about three decades here in Oklahoma City finally went to him, and he comes back with the x-ray, and he says, and he knows what running means to me, you need to decide if you want to remain a runner. And so from a muscle strain to possible stress fracture to, do I want to remain a runner? Said, Will, I think we know that answer. From that emerged kind of exploratory hip procedure, which hopefully would circumvent a hip replacement. But your instincts are usually pretty darn good, even if you don't want them to be. And as much as I hoped that surgery would help, it was clear to me it wasn't the answer. And so 18 months later, a hip replacement, which just as clearly I could tell was the answer for me. That was a couple days after our Oklahoma City Memorial Marathon of 07, so we're coming up on 7 years. I don't run our race, but I have duties where once I knew, folks are usually told to put off a hip replacement because you never know how long it'll last. Mm-hmm. Well, I trust technology, and technology is getting better and better. I was ready to go for the surgery as soon as I knew, but I wanted to get through our marathon, and so the doc was very accommodating, and 2 days later I had the procedure, and I never felt that I wouldn't run, but you go into some self-defense modes. Maybe it's a bit shock, mm-hmm. a bit just keep on keeping on. Another bit, if I don't think about all the negatives I'm hearing, because, as you know, one negative word can virtually erase 100 positives.
Right.
So I decided that it's a glass three-quarter full view, not half empty, which is a big template I have. And as much as the hip replacement may have taken away in terms of time on the roads and mileage, in all aspects of my life, it's given me much more. So I'm very grateful. And indeed, the running's just fine now. A little bit different than it used to be in terms of speed and distance. And your perspective can change. My goal is no more marathons, as I tell people. And I loved them. And I got my share, maybe 40 or so. But I don't even consider it a compromise. You can get great gratification out of different things. So the half marathon, as I see it now, is my continued goal as far as virtual top distance. And my wife, I know, I was married about 4.5 years ago, will be much happier if I hold to that. But she knows if I have to revisit that thought process of a marathon, then we'll talk. But I'm very grateful for where it has taken me and all it has given me in terms of enlightenment and gratitude, the kinder, gentler approach we talked about and all.
Yeah. Well, Mark, we're running out of time here, and as we do with all of our guests, we'd like to give you the opportunity to give us a take-home message. What do you want our audience to remember if they remember nothing else about our podcast today?
I have to say that there's one non-negotiable in life. Many folks have days where they can't control seemingly anything that goes on that entire waking day, but there is one non-negotiable you can, and that's called a glass three-quarter full view, not half empty approach to life. It doesn't guarantee that everything works your way. In fact, everything won't, but there is a much better chance with that outlook, I will assure you, that you will achieve the life you desire.
Great take-home message. And thank you for being with us today. We've really enjoyed it. Enjoyed having you here.
Thank you so much. My honor to be here.
Well, you're more than welcome. And again, we just want the audience to remember that Mark has got a book out, an author of a book called Momentum, 77 Observations Towards a Life Well Lived, available on Amazon and your neighborhood bookstore, I believe, right?
Sure, and at runbravo.com if they want a signed copy. It'll come straight to me.
Excellent. And what we'll do is we will take and make sure that your website address is on the show notes. So
well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. And as many of our regular listeners know, this is the time that we have our podcast question of the week. And with our podcast question of the week is our producer, Cheryl.
What are the three types of shoes to consider for running?
Excellent question. Be the first one to send us the correct answer at huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. And you'll win one of those nifty podcast T-shirts. And hurry, they are going quick, but don't think you're too late. So even if you hear this a few days after it's come out, make sure you send us an email. We've been known to send out T-shirts to sometimes the second and third person that answers as well. So again, until next week, we hope that you all join us. We thank you for tuning in this week, and we do hope that you join us next week when we have another interesting person in the world of sports medicine and human performance with us. And until next week, we hope that you have an active and healthy week.
Thanks for listening to the Huffines Institute Weekly Sports Medicine Podcast. This podcast was produced by Kelly Selman and Aylin Letzinger and made possible by generous support from the Omar Smith family and the Sidney and J.L. Huffines family. This podcast is published under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That means you can't sell it or change it, but feel free to give it to everyone you know and to talk and blog about us. And in case you were wondering, our opening and closing are provided by johnmilesproductions.com. Music was provided by Dave Zeltner. Find him on the web at davidzeltner.com. And just so you know, we love hearing from you. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.